Well, I think in spite of the nice things Kate said about me, there is quite a bit of agreement between us, which, however, shall not deter me from trying to show that there is an inherent connection between the women's liberation movement and socialism, and I shall have the impertinence of going even one step further, saying that the ultimate aims of women's liberation can only be attained in a socialist society, although socialist in a sense very different from the prevailing one in theory as well as in practice. In order to be able at least to make the attempt to show it, I have to discuss the movement within the context of other radical political movements today. Now, this does not mean nor imply denial of the relative autonomy of the movement. I say relative autonomy. Why? Because any movement that involves or aims at structural changes in the established material and intellectual culture finds itself operating under general conditions of actual repression and potential liberation, conditions which shape the specific needs and goals of the respective movement. Thus, the women's liberation movement operates today under the general conditions of capitalist production, of the capitalist market, the capitalist culture, and they make the movement, willing or not, part of the political struggle, though centered on its own social and individual base, with its own needs and with its own goals. Before I can discuss the problem of the relation between the movement and the socialism, I would like to make the attempt to outline at least where I see the radical potential of the movement within the political struggle today. I suggest that to the radical political struggle against capitalism, to the radical political struggle for a society without classes, the movement has added another dimension. Not only the dimension of quantitative growth, namely the emergence of radical consciousness among a very large social group in rebellion against the system, a group which is not a class, a group constituted on a socio-biological foundation, but precisely for these reasons, activating rebellious forces which transcend class lines. Which transcend class lines and make for the explosion of needs long since repressed. Needs and goals, in the last analysis, incompatible with the requirements of capitalism and attainable only through a change in the entire material and intellectual culture. The radical potential of the movement, the depth and scope of social change implied in this potential, in this other dimension which the movement has added, can perhaps be elucidated by focusing on the male-female dichotomy as that between essentially opposed masculine and feminine insisted that the antithesis masculine-feminine is the socio-historical conditioning of the development of the male and female in a repressive society at the expense of the woman. But that is not all. The unequal distribution of allegedly essentially different qualities which fortified the social inferiority and weakness attributed to the woman cannot be undone by the simple denial in ideology and in practice of these qualities. They have become a social fact, perpetuated, though perhaps mollified and alleviated, by the institutions of modern class society. Simple denial would not do, because in a distorted and humiliating form, the allegedly feminine qualities spell the negation of aggressiveness, brutality, alienation. And their abolition as female and feminine qualities must preserve this content. That is to say, must at the same time be the abolition of aggressiveness, brutality, alienation on a social scale. A radical transformation of the very basis and of the basic values of the established societies. In other words, the repressive attribution and exploitation of allegedly feminine qualities can only be finally undone by the socialization of these qualities and not by their mere negation. Socialization of these qualities, what does that mean? The equation of the opposition male-female and masculine-feminine, an equation which is expressive of the surplus repression of women in the developed class societies, this equation is rooted in the mode of production and the production relationships themselves. Namely, I believe that the allegedly feminine qualities are those human qualities which could not be developed in the sphere of social production, organized for domination, exploitation, aggressiveness, efficiency, and power. Consequently, the qualities repressed in the sphere of production were transferred to the woman and were localized in the private sphere, domestic sphere, separated from and antagonistic to the sphere of social production, though also permeated with its hierarchical features. This, I believe, is the basis on which the equation male-female with masculine-feminine, reason, feeling, productivity, receptivity, and so on, was established and institutionalized in hierarchical form. Or, in other words, what has been stipulated as and made into the female antithesis is in fact a repressed social alternative. I refer you again, I did it before on this campus, to the excellent formulation of this development in Bram Dijkstra's essay on the androgyne in 19th century literature. Now, if this is the case, if the hyency, allegedly male-female, masculine-feminine opposition, stands a social alternative, then the reification of natural, specifically female qualities can